Welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Oregon Justice Resource Center is an organization that promotes civil rights and improves legal representation for underserved communities. My guest is Zach Winston, Policy Director for Oregon Justice Resource Center. Welcome, Zach.
Thank you for having me.
So, Zach, the Oregon legislature is in session, and we'll discuss Oregon Justice Resource Center's legislative agenda. But first, let's talk about some of the lawsuits that your organization has filed on behalf of prisoners and protesters.
Absolutely. So Judge Magistrate Federal Courts Beckerman recently granted a preliminary injunction in favor of the AICs or adults in custody who have not received vaccinations. And so the preliminary injunction order mentions that all AICs should be prioritized and be receiving vaccinations. And so our understanding is that the governor's office is not going to be appealing that. And so AICs or adults in custody, again, should be getting vaccinated already in the near future. Another resource for COVID-19 information on ojrc.info/COVID-19. If you scroll down, you can see some letters that were written. And one of those letters is a letter that we're sending to AICs on the vaccine rollout. Our hope is that loved ones and adults in custody can gain some valuable information. And it's actually authored by Juan Chavez, who had that great victory in the preliminary injunction. So absolutely a good resource that we hope individuals will check out on our website.
And when will that letter be mailed?
I believe the letter went out to individuals who are currently incarcerated, at least the first round, on February 11th.
Willamette Week is reporting that about half of the prison staff will not be vaccinated against COVID.
Yeah, we're disappointed to hear that. I think that the numbers that were reported for AICs that were or adults in custody who were offered the vaccination, I think 80-something percent of those offered accepted the vaccine. And so we're disappointed to hear that the staff is you know, around 50% acceptance rate. We would like to see that obviously increase because it'll protect both the staff, the community, and the AICs.
And Oregon Justice Resource Center, or OJRC, is representing Don't Shoot Portland in a lawsuit against the city of Portland. Can you talk about that lawsuit?
Sure. I have less information on that. I do know that the most recent decision, I believe, was that a police officer was held in contempt. Police Bureau was held in contempt and that they were discussing ways to remedy that violation of the court order in regards to munitions that were used. And so I believe that is still ongoing.
Zach, let's get to OJRC's legislative agenda. You have some bills that affect women in Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, bills that affect youth who are involved with the criminal legal system. So let's start with House Bill 2825. Now, this requires sentencing to include domestic abuse as a mitigating factor.
And just for the listeners, any policies or bills that we talk about can be found on ojrc.info/policy. And that's going to be continually updated throughout the session. So they can either go on there or follow along on Instagram or Twitter at OJR Center or Facebook. So HB 2825 is chief sponsored by Representative Anna Williams. It would require the court to consider at sentencing mitigation evidence of domestic abuse. And so the real goal of the bill is to provide access to women or men. It's a gender neutral bill, but to provide access to survivor defendants, so individuals who are survivors of domestic abuse and are defendants, to allow them to present the court with mitigating evidence that they were abused and that that abuse is a contributing factor to the crime that they were convicted of. There's also a second avenue of relief, which is for individuals who are currently incarcerated to apply for resentencing under the same matrix of three requirements: that they're a survivor, that the abuse was a contributing factor to the crime, and that the presumptive or mandatory sentence is unduly harsh in light of the circumstances. So it does pierce Measure 11.
That was my question. How will that affect mandatory minimum sentencing? Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So we don't anticipate it would be a very large population that would be able to avail themselves of this bill, but it's a very important population and a very vulnerable population. And so for us, practically speaking, it requires a 2/3 vote to pass, which is a significant hurdle to overcome. And then it would chip away at Measure 11. And so understanding that there are other bills that would be doing some more major reform to Measure 11, this would, for a specific population and a targeted population, it would allow judges to come out of mandatory minimum and downward depart in the sentence and provide a lesser sentence.
And then another bill that affects women at Coffee Creek, Oregon's only women's prison, is House Bill 2912. And that provides legal assistance to adults in custody. And it is a pilot program of OJRC.
Correct. Yeah. So HB 2912 is a really important bill. It's funding, it's continuing or reauthorizing funding for the Remembering Program, which is the name of the pilot project. And so Remembering provides civil legal services to individuals at Coffee Creek, which, as you mentioned, is the only women's prison in Oregon. And we had a public hearing on 2-9 on February 9th, and we're hoping for a work session soon on the bill. And, you know, the interesting thing about the Remembering Project is that it started up right before COVID hit and started to shut down a lot of avenues for communication and obviously coordination with currently incarcerated individuals. But despite the pandemic, Remembering served about nearly 60 women, and more than 55% of those women identified as BIPOC, and they each had about 1 to 6 different civil legal matters that were addressed by the 3 attorneys that are working for Remembering. So it's a very important bill to us.
And give some examples of the assistance that this pilot program of your organization, what does it do?
Sure. So just kind of anything you can think of for individuals. So, you know, and I'm formerly incarcerated myself. And so there's a lot of different issues that come up while you're incarcerated that you didn't necessarily anticipate that can also have huge consequences on your family, on loved ones, and then also on yourself for when you're trying to reenter society, which already has significant barriers. And so, you know, just some examples of ways in which Remembering attorneys have helped women at Coffee Creek. They helped a client avoid foreclosure on her home. They've remit about, I think, over tens of thousands of dollars worth of debt. And a lot of that is just kind of trying to mitigate and just allow collections agencies or, you know, organizations that are trying to collect from them to let them know that the person is incarcerated and to try to come to an agreement for not repaying the debt at least right away or come up with a payment plan. And so it's really important that if that doesn't happen, you know, bills can rack up and it causes huge barriers upon release. There's also a lot of work surrounding family law and to allow communication or open up communication between a mom and their child if either the co-parent or whoever's taking care of the children isn't providing the access that mother deserves and is legally entitled to. So it kind of spans a bunch of different areas.
Zach, let's talk about the bills you have for youth who are either incarcerated or become entangled with the criminal legal system. Senate Bill 422 eliminates fees and court costs associated with juvenile delinquency matters.
Sure. And so SB 422 is not necessarily our core bill. We are supporting Youth Rights and Justice, who's mainly championing that bill. And our Youth Justice Project is working on some, we have some individuals with the Youth Justice Project, which is with the Oregon Justice Resource Center, who are previously incarcerated and are working on this bill with Youth Rights and Justice to provide testimony surrounding the bill. But, you know, from my understanding of it, SB 422 would end juvenile administration fees in Oregon. And as we know, fines and fees are huge barriers for individuals for reentering society or even just being able to survive. And so a lot of times in the juvenile system, this either falls upon a juvenile who, as you know, we don't expect, doesn't have much income, or on the parents. And generally speaking, as we also know, the criminal justice system disproportionately affects communities of color who are already disadvantaged. And now they're having fines and fees tacked on to that. And that just, to us, is unreasonable and dangerous.
Yeah. And Zach, for people that don't know, talk about these court costs and fees when people release from incarceration or just become involved with the criminal justice system.
Sure. And it's important to distinguish between restitution and fines and fees, right? So, and fines and fees sometimes gets blurred and there's technical definitions that we don't necessarily need to get into, but fines and fees generally are separate from restitution. Restitution is the amount that's going to be paid to a victim in a case. And fines and fees are for the, let's just say the administrative process to play out, or at least that's what proponents of those fines and fees state. And so it's important to remember that, you know, this falls onto the individuals who are being prosecuted, even and especially juveniles in this case. And so fines and fees can rack up, and then there are late fees. And then if you don't get on a payment plan, the late fees become even later fees, and then additional, and then eventually it could potentially get to collections, which then tacks on additional fees. And it just exponentially increases without the youth or the parents even knowing.
And the Youth Rights and Justice is also involved with another bill, Senate Bill 575, that involves expunction. Now, talk about expunction for our youth and its importance.
And so expunction or expungement or set aside, those three can be used relatively interchangeably. It's hugely important. And again, this is another Youth Rights and Justice led bill. And I believe it was introduced potentially in 2019 before, I think, the walkout. But it's a bill that would, there's a very narrow set of adjudications or convictions in the juvenile court that are eligible for expunction or expungement. And so this bill, my understanding is it would allow for that process to be automatic and initiated by the courts or the juvenile department. And so not necessarily relying on the juvenile when they turn 18 and are eligible for expunction to have to go in and initiate the process, because I believe the research shows that the number of individuals who are eligible but actually follow through is just very small. And so that's concerning, because these are, you know, adjudications that are eligible for expungement.
And again, a lot of that follow through or lack thereof is because of the cost of expunging their records.
Absolutely. The cost of expunging the record, the cost of potentially having to travel to the court of adjudication if they're no longer in that area, the cost of traveling, all the costs of life in general, when we think about when we have to go, you know, complete a task, on top of fines and fees, restitution, and all the other systemic barriers.
So, Zach, you said that Youth Rights and Justice was leading the efforts on these bills for expunction reform and eliminating fees, and that Oregon Justice Resource Center Youth Justice Project is supporting their efforts. So what is the work of OJRC's Youth Justice Project?
One of the projects run through OJRC is the Youth Justice Project. And so the Youth Justice Project is comprised of a team to support the implementation of Senate Bill 1008, which was in 2019, is the significant youth justice bill. And so it made several changes to youth sentencing. And so they provide a holistic and dynamic support to public defenders to ensure that the mandates of SB 1008 are fully realized. And so they're on the ground, they're working with incarcerated individuals, and those involved with the Youth Justice Project have personal experience with the system. And so it is an extremely valuable service for those youth who are kind of walking through the similar process. And so they are working with Youth Rights and Justice, which handles the majority of youth delinquency and dependency cases in, I believe, Multnomah County and potentially Washington County. And so they are working closely with them on, for example, the juvenile expunction bill and also SB 422 on eliminating fines and fees for juveniles.
And Zach, talk right now about how people can get involved, what we need to do to get these bills passed through the Oregon legislature.
Absolutely. For those two youth bills, you know, reaching out to Youth Rights and Justice, reaching out to me, my email address is on the ojrc.info/policy page, and we can point listeners into the direction for action. But essentially reaching out to your legislators, emailing, tweeting, and mentioning the bills and your support for those bills is hugely impactful.
Senate Bill 499 creates a civil claim for wrongful convictions. Can you update us on that one?
Sure. And so the Oregon Innocence Project is a project of the Oregon Justice Resource Center. And so It's a bill that is chief sponsored by Senator Kim Thatcher, who's a Republican in the Oregon Senate. And we've been working on it with developing it with the National Innocence Project and their support. And so the bill is modeled after a Kansas law that recently passed, and it would provide exonerees access to the court to address harms caused by the state. So if someone is exonerated or through different vehicles, through a pardon or through retrial and finding not guilty or other avenues that come with that, or post-conviction relief, a court finds that an individual has been exonerated. The bill would allow an avenue, because currently there is no avenue other than filing a civil suit and trying to maybe Frankenstein some claims together to try and collect some compensation for the time that they were wrongfully convicted and incarcerated. And so this bill just provides an avenue for that, and it would provide $65,000 for each year of wrongful imprisonment, plus up to $25,000 for years spent on parole or post-prison supervision, or on the sex offender registry. It also addresses non-monetary services. So the difficult thing with exonerees is that oftentimes, because they no longer have a conviction, they're not necessarily eligible for some reentry services that require you to be system involved. And so it's a real catch-22 that they're dealing with. And so SB 499 does provide access to non-monetary services to include counseling, housing assistance, and personal financial literacy. And lastly, it's a straightforward process. It would provide a certificate of innocence upon a finding by the court. And that just helps individuals who are exonerated move on with their lives, or at least start to.
And another one, Senate Bill 571, would allow persons convicted of a felony to register to vote and vote while incarcerated. That's very exciting.
It is very exciting. And again, as a formerly incarcerated individual, it's uniquely exciting for me. I think one of the most disappointing aspects of being incarcerated, at least in my experience, was being disassociated from the political system and from decisions that directly affected me and, you know, my fellow incarcerated individuals. And so this is extremely exciting. We're working with Next Up Oregon. You know, we really see this as a pro-democracy bill and not necessarily criminal justice reform, because this is really at the heart of it about allowing individuals to vote. And those individuals happen to be incarcerated. And so this is a bill we've been getting excellent support from Representative Salinas, Senator Gelser, Rep Bynum, and Senator Dembro on this. And it's really relatively simple. I mean, it allows individuals to vote who are currently incarcerated. It allows them to participate in the process, which then also encourages participation in society once someone is released. And so it's extremely important.
Because they will be released back to their communities.
Correct. 95% of individuals who are currently incarcerated are released back to their communities. And it's not just Portland, Hillsboro, or it's not just that tri-county area. It's all over the state. And so it is important for us to invest in, and this is a minimal investment, really. And we would be the first state in the country to re-enfranchise. So Oregon's constitution disenfranchised, and we would be the first state to re-enfranchise. Maine and Vermont just never disenfranchised incarcerated individuals.
House Bill 2932 directs the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission to establish a database of reports of use of physical force by officers.
Yeah. So HB 2932 is kind of, it's not necessarily an affirmative bill of ours, but it is one that we support. It's in a long list of policing reforms that are proposed for this session, generally in the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Equitable Policing. And so along with munitions, arbitration fixes, the use of force reports, or HB 2932, is hugely important. Community has been pretty clear for a while now that there needs to be changes to both access to information and also transparency. And so a lot of these policing bills aim to do that. We do have a bill that was actually just recently introduced, HB 3145, which would require the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, or DPSST, to establish a publicly available database of certain information about misconduct and discipline of public safety employees. The second prong of it is that it allows production of disciplinary records of those employees under public records law. And so there are a number of these bills that are seeking to increase transparency in the policing process and the disciplinary process.
And there's a new 12-member BIPOC caucus in the legislature, and their top priority for this session is police accountability. And I know Oregon Justice Resource Center is supporting all of their efforts. That's very exciting, too.
It is. And the amazing thing about Oregon, as a former recovering New Yorker, the amazing thing about Oregon is that there are these amazing organizations that are doing great work. And that allows OJRC to really focus in on our bills on direct representation and what we're learning from that direct representation. While others work on bills like policing and Measure 11 reform or the BIPOC agenda, which is making significant advancements as well. And so we're definitely supporting and monitoring all of those bills, and we're offering any support we can to the BIPOC caucus's agenda.
And speaking of reforming Measure 11, there is a bill that was introduced by a number of criminal justice reform organizations here in Oregon. Can you talk about House Bill 2002?
Sure. So it's a big bill, I think is an easy way to describe it. I do know that PSJ, Partners for Safety and Justice, and OCDLA, which is the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, and others in the community have been working on this omnibus bill, which includes different pieces of legislation, and one of which is Measure 11 reform. And so it is a comprehensive criminal justice reform bill, which touches on Measure 11, and if passed, would change mandatory sentencing to presumptive sentencing, which would be a huge win in the legislature. And it is scheduled for a hearing in the House Judiciary Committee on February 16th.
And Zach, can you talk a little bit more about what that means for our mandatory minimum sentencing laws to change this to presumptive sentencing?
Sure. So without getting too technical into the sentencing weeds, which we can go on for days, the important piece to remember is that the goal is to really provide the judiciary, so the judges, with the discretion to hear a case, to hear the specific facts of that case and the individual, the defendant, and their story and how they ended up as a defendant. And so by providing mandatory minimum sentences or prescribing mandatory minimum sentences, you're really taking that power away from the judge and providing it with the district attorney who makes the charging decisions. And so by taking something out of mandatory sentencing and providing presumptive sentencing, you're giving that power back to the judge. And you're allowing defense attorneys and the defense community to make arguments for mitigation and why, you know, the presumptive sentence may be too high. And it allows the prosecution to argue why the presumptive sentences may be too low. And then eventually a judge will make that decision. And really, that's the way it should be, because a one size fits all approach is just not working.
So, Zach, the Oregon Justice Resource Center has been collaborating with Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Can you talk about that collaboration?
So we've been working with the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, OPSR is what I'm going to refer to them as, just because it's easier to say. OPSR and OJRC have been working closely on a number of different issues, everything from electronic medical records in prisons to early medical release, or otherwise known as compassionate release. And the current system just isn't working. So we have been discussing with OPSR ways in which we can revamp the system and actually make it accessible to individuals. And so currently, it's way too restrictive. No one's able to use it. No one knows how to use it. And it's just, it's pretty ineffective, especially at a time when you would think that with COVID that it would actually be more robust and able to be accessed. And so we've recently put in a legislative concept request. And so that is put in through legislators who then send it to drafting, and then we get a bill draft back. And so we're waiting on that bill draft, but I'm happy to talk about kind of what we expect it to have in it. And so the legislative concepts were submitted by Representative Reynolds on the House side and Senator Denbrough on the Senate side. And so it would fix the current broken process and replace it with a better, more accessible early medical release process and system. And so we'd broaden the criteria for early medical release and place more emphasis on a medical analysis and no focus on public safety, but less focus on public safety and more focus on actual medical analysis and medical need for release. And so this would be achieved through establishing an independent committee, likely in the Board of Parole, but independent from it, that would be comprised of medical professionals, addiction professionals, and mental health professionals. And they would then analyze these cases and applications for medical release under a broader criteria of eligibility. And our hope is that this process becomes more accessible to both currently incarcerated individuals and their families and loved ones who could also potentially initiate the process. And so we're definitely going to have more information on this concept, again, at the ojrc.info/policy page after we receive the bill draft back. But it is a really exciting process, and it is another bill that may require a two-thirds vote. And so we will likely be needing the community support on this bill once it's introduced.
You found a position of ombudsman that could provide independent oversight, review, and transparency into the Oregon Department of Corrections, but it isn't fully funded. So what is OJRC's plans for this ombudsman position?
We were involved in kind of getting this, at least the ombudsman position, funded just for, you know, as immediately as possible to help with the COVID situation, lack of transparency. And so with the help of the emergency board, it was in part funded to appoint or hire an individual for this ombudsman position. And the hope is that it will allow for greater transparency, allow for investigations, and allow for actual beneficial data to be released so that we can make better decisions as a community and hopefully for the legislature. And so we're waiting to hear back on kind of who is likely to be appointed. I know that we've identified Michelle Burrows as an individual that we would like to see appointed to the position, who has significant experience with prison litigation, especially like I believe it was Hep C litigation that she did. And so, yeah, it was a position that was created, I think, in 1975 or in the 70s and just hadn't been funded. And so there was definitely no better time than this COVID pandemic to really get that up and running. We hope it happens soon.
And so OJRC is recommending attorney Michelle Burrows, and people can contact Governor Brown and urge her to fund this position and appoint attorney Michelle Burrows for that position. Again, how do people get involved? Talk about what they need to do to help get these bills passed.
The best way to get these bills passed is to contact legislators, and to get that information on either who to contact or also more information on the bills, individuals can go to ojrc.info/policy for policy specific information. They could also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at OJR Center, and then also on Facebook for Oregon Justice Resource Center. And just staying on top of updates, and we will be putting out action alerts and calls for action that individuals can absolutely participate in.
And they can go to OregonLegislature.gov and actually sign up for alerts about individual bills there and hear about the hearings and participate that way. I've been speaking with Zach Winston, Policy Director with Oregon Justice Resource Center. Thank you so much, Zach.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for listening.